As an employee-owned financial firm, Baird offers advice solely focused on clients' needs, while consistently investing in their expertise and capabilities to serve those in need. More information at baird-difference.com.
Good afternoon. Nice to be with you. I'm fine, Mike. How are you doing? You hope you had a good time away.
Refreshed and ready to get back at it. And I'll let you know that if I do leave again, I did not expect earthquake. I did not expect epic floods and huge rain events. I mean, cicadas are around. I had nothing to do with that one. I get that part. But gee, oh my goodness. And last weekend, the beauty of social media. I'm again, at my mom's house down in Florida. I've got kids running around, pop on the internet around 11:30, 12 o'clock on Friday night, and there are the videos that are being shuffled along of unbelievable amounts of water on Kirkwood. Well, those were the – nobody's hanging out at Dunn Meadow at midnight, so they're at the bars. I get it. That's where the videos are going to come from. Oh, but a couple years ago we had a quick afternoon bad flood like that, but this had absolutely – this was three times as worse. Unbelievable. I'm glad that the damage is – and I know this stinks to those who have damage. It's not completely widespread. We did have a loss of life, which is – just awful. I've never seen anything like that around here. I know you've been around for a while as well. The pictures at Nick's that hang up were the people kayaking down Kirkwood. Well, you've been trying to fix that problem, but no one can fix 2 inches in an hour, right?
Well, it was a really extraordinary and dangerous rain event. And, you know, it is my utilities director, Vic Kelson, makes a couple points. One, he says that was really more like a Florida rain, you know, where you had super intense rainstorm that we're not as used to in terms of the pace of it. Somebody indicated that we got all of June's rain in a few hours there.
Correct.
You know, our typical. And so it is going to be, it was overwhelming to our landscape, which is not great at accepting water. You know, the physical geography and karst topography and limestone hard surface can make it difficult to deal with water like that. And it really was dangerous. As you said, we lost a life, you know, a really terrible accident of a car getting swept up, and one person made it barely and the other didn't. Reminds us this stuff is really serious. We, you know, I'm happy to talk about the infrastructure work that's going on there, but it's also just a reminder that sometimes Mother Nature has the upper hand no matter what we do.
And I don't know how many people have ever seen the flooding in some of the areas that pictures were coming in from. I'm befuddled because you've never seen that much rain at one time. The other part is the underground hidden or the hidden river we've been talking about, the big dig on Kirkwood that we've seen in the past. All this has been to relieve normal rainfall, but there's nothing you can do to alleviate torrential rainfall.
Yeah, I'll make a couple points maybe about that. One, you know, it was really extraordinary cooperation. I understand our department plus the fire district, the outside the city district, did over 100 saves and runs that night to get to people who are under threat, either in or in the water or in a vehicle or on an island that was stuck. And they just did extraordinary work to get to people and get people to safety, or it could have been a lot worse. So thanks to our first responders who were out all night responding to a month's worth of calls in one night. And and then I would just say, you know, physically thinking, I try to explain that hidden river and the expansion. And if you think of the kind of the IU campus and the creek that runs, the now called Campus River, that runs underground at 6th and Jordan, if you think of that as kind of like a bathtub, it's not, I'm sorry, 6th in Indiana, there on the west side of campus at Dunn Meadow. If you think of that like a bathtub with water flowing into it, that's the drain at the bottom of the bathtub, is that pipe, right, coming out. And we're expanding that pipe, and we're doing the last piece. It got expanded, one part of the pipe got expanded 20 years ago in the big dig, and then nothing was done for a while, and now we're kind of expanding the size of that pipe that comes out and moves water underground through the city to First and College and lets it go on into the Daylett Creek. And as that pipe is made bigger, it can handle more water. But if you get more water pouring into that bathtub, that watershed, then can move through that pipe, it's just going to fill up and back up. And that's what happens when it overflows into Kirkwood and the bathtub basically just can't, the drain at the bottom of it isn't big enough. And it's going to be bigger. We actually have one last piece probably in 2023 to expand the actual hole there at 6th and Indiana, which is still sized to the current size. But even then, if your pipe's not big enough for this kind of storm, you're still going to get some backflow. And, we're expanding it, but I can't promise that it won't happen again. I do know that the pipe worked as well as it could. It's got the old style. The old pipe worked as well as it could. It just got overwhelmed by the rain.
So I think the greater takeaway here is there is nothing nothing broke down, or this wasn't caused because of some ongoing construction work. It was caused because of, it was just an enormous amount of rain in a very short time.
Yeah, I've double checked that. And if we had been doing nothing on the construction, if we had just left it as it was 2 years ago, that's how it flowed on Friday night. You know,
wow.
It's just not, it had the regular flow through it, and it was working as it used to be designed. The new system will be about twice as big in terms of what volume it can carry, about a doubling the size of it, which will be helpful. But, I'm not sure it would have gotten rid of what happened Friday night. It would have helped some. But we had Garden Villa on the west side with the nursing home, care facility that had to evacuate. It had May Greenhouse downstream. You had the automobile accident was on the west side, not at Kirkwood. This hit 30 miles around us, and Kirkwood certainly took a big slug to the midsection, and we're working really hard. People have cooperated so well. But it's just a reminder that sometimes these extreme events happen. We worry that they may happen even a little more with the intensity of climate change and what the meteorologists say. And neither you nor I as a meteorologist, though you do play one, I know, on the radio, but that these things could become more frequent. So we've got to watch for them.
And a great point on the first responders who don't have the luxury of I'll just wait 10 minutes before this calms down. No, they have to go out and go. And over 100 a month's worth of work in one night. We should all thank them every time we run into them, for sure. Now, as we move forward, we've had a lot of recovering forward. I know that's one of your major themes after the pandemic, and now you throw this on top of it. Is there any role the city can play with damages or disaster? Do you call FEMA on behalf? How does that work for people like me who don't understand all the workings of the government making of the sausage?
Yeah, since the rain began, we had dozens of people out all night clearing inlets and from the first responders to the utility workers to public workers and public streets workers and others all that night. And the next morning, we started cleaning up the Kirkwood mud and having street sweepers and hosing things down. And so there's been a lot of cleanup, picking up limbs and clearing parks and trails and all that stuff. So that goes on kind of in the immediate aftermath. There was a meeting yesterday of a lot of the merchants downtown to talk about the next steps. There are financial aid that may be available. There's financial aid that may be available. Most of the emergency aid comes through the county. The county government runs the emergency response activation system, and they are the ones that apply for the disaster declaration. We've been working closely with them, and anybody that's interested, you can go right to the county website, Monroe County website. Just Google that, and they have information about financial aid and disaster assistance and all. We in the city are working closely from our Economic and Sustainability Development Department to work with individual merchants and the downtown. There may be an event that's planned for next week that's kind of in the works. We'll know more about that at our next week's show, probably,
right,
to kind of try to help people and welcome them back. But it was, you know, from the Red Cross to the county emergency to county health to the city, public works and utility, everybody was has been working together very well.
Mayor John Hamilton is our guest every Tuesday just after 4:05. We always appreciate him joining us. So Mother Nature, the Hidden River Project continues on. What was, if anything, the project that is happening, as you alluded to, was there any damage? Did that set it back? Are we on schedule? What did the utilities have to say, assess after that all the water disappeared?
Yeah, it's I think they're right back at it. They're having to pump out some of the work locations that got inundated, kind of outside the culvert, if you will. But as far as I know, they're right back at it. Again, we that project should be done by next year. It's a very major construction project. We hope it'll be finished a little early. And then the next step is that last step, which is expanding the inlet. So once your pipe is big enough, then you can expand the inlet. If you expand the inlet too soon, it really doesn't, it puts the stress on your system that it can't handle. So, as we've talked about, we kind of joked about it a little bit, but it's part of this Hidden River Project is to let people physically see where this river flows and remind us there is this river flowing underneath our city. It kind of made that pretty obvious on Friday night, but it's a reminder that we've built a city on top of this river, and we need to manage it and continue to plan for what might happen.
Does the university give you
fire department? By the way, fire department and police department both got inundated too. Right in the row there. The fire department's still not open. We're having to make do with some temporary placements of trucks and individuals.
So, a lot of people, Washington Street East, it seems, were affected by this. Does the university help in any way? I don't know how this partnership works, or are you responsible for the utilities because you're the city?
Yeah, we are responsible for the water, though it is a good point to remind all of us that the what we call green infrastructure, we've been talking about the gray infrastructure, the concrete, the hard infrastructure, but a very common topic these days is green infrastructure, which is how do you manage water before it gets to the gray infrastructure, to the pipes. And that is something we have added to this, to the city utilities department has now a annual budget they've never had before, any, and now I think $400,000 a year that we spend to improve green roofs and rain gardens and swales and the kind of things that can help slow down the surface water. University is a partner in that. We can always work with them more to think about how do we structure the built environment to slow the water down and try to percolate it a little more so it doesn't overwhelm the gray infrastructure system that we have.
And it's interesting because we all have to work together, even though that we don't all have our own water systems. Now we can see why that is the case. So the good news is we're dry yesterday, we were dry on Sunday, and we will be dry all the way up until Friday. And hopefully all those businesses can get back on their feet, the police station, the fire station, the Boys and Girls Club, all of those folks down. You can go follow the map and you know exactly who was affected by it. Mayor John Hamilton is our guest this afternoon. Had a big holiday on Monday. Juneteenth was put into play federally, and Bloomington obviously followed along with that. Tell me when that became official and the genesis behind that idea.
Well, we had a Juneteenth event scheduled out at Switchyard Park Saturday, which was a wonderful event for lots of folks to celebrate this historic Emancipation Day, Freedom Day, Juneteenth, called different things from 1865, when kind of the last piece of America got notified of the Emancipation Proclamation. So we've been planning that schedule. I will confess, I was surprised by how quickly the federal government moved the week before last week in creating the holiday and enacting it and then declaring it in the federal government within 24 hours. So when we heard on Thursday that it was official, we did think about making Friday a holiday, but that was just too soon, too quick. So we made Monday the holiday following the federal lead. We'll put that into our calendar more regularly next year. And it was a great holiday, a reminder of part of the American story and how we've gotten better as a country and celebrating those who've helped make that true. So it was a great celebration on Saturday, and then we observed it Monday, yesterday, in the city for all those who can take a regular holiday. Of course, that doesn't include police and fire and water and sanitation, lots of other people, but who work all around. But it'll be on the regular schedule next year, and my hat's off to the federal government for doing that, and we were glad to join in, even if we were Monday instead of Friday.
Well, I think those who get the day off don't mind. They don't mind which day it would be. Now, speaking of checking things out online, and I'm looking, as always do when we talk, at bloomington.in.gov, you wanted to talk about a online survey. What, you want folks to go check it out because we need to get moving on this project. Tell me what that is.
Yeah, we've talked a few times, Mike, about the American Rescue Plan Act, affectionately known as ARPA. The Rescue Plan is a federal program of major funds that are going all around the country to help communities and states and counties recover. That's the money that's bringing $22 million to the city of Bloomington, $29 million to the county of Monroe to help help us invest one-time money in the recovery. And that we've talked about that a few times, and I've talked about the different buckets we're looking at using it for, with housing or for jobs or for replacing some lost income or public infrastructure and the like. And online now, I would welcome any public input that we can get from individuals who want to weigh in and say, well, among your buckets, here's how I'd fill them up with $22 million. Or if you prefer to just do your own, here's what I think you ought to do with the money, you know, disregard your buckets, here's what I think you ought to do with it. You can do that. I encourage you to do that on the city website and go online and look for the rescue plan feedback. We need it by July 2nd because we're going to be going to city council before too long with a plan. So I encourage everybody to give us your views. The county, I'm sure, is welcome to hear them too, but on the city website, we'd love to get that in the next 10 days or so.
Now, I think that's why I was trying to go earlier with, can the city help out, or what can you do or not do with the flood? Would this be something that you could say, well, we need the buckets to get the water out first, so that's what we can use those buckets for, and then we'll take some of the money that's in there because it's a one-time deal to help some of these businesses. Is that the role of this, or am I crossing the streams here?
Well, the rescue plan is not really designed for natural disaster relief. You know, the federal government and state partners have programs that are focused on natural disaster relief declarations, the approaches that we take to that. The American Rescue Plan is really focused on how does our community and our country climb out of this pandemic and the economic recession. Now, there may be some overlap. There's allowances for water infrastructure, for example, in the American Rescue Plan to enhance your water infrastructure, which can relate to this. It's certainly some of our businesses that got hit in the flood are businesses that are also trying to recover from the pandemic. And so we're going to be looking at projects and programs and investments that can help. But it is not meant to be, and it's kind of a square peg in a round hole to try to turn ARPA, the rescue plan, into an emergency response. They're really two different things.
Gotcha. So I just wanted you to clarify that in case anybody misunderstood my babbling, mumbling. I'm a little rusty. I haven't been on the air for a while. So that is the interesting part of how government works, and I think that's why I enjoy our conversations. One of the reasons. Every Tuesday, you say, well, we got all this money. Just throw it over here, and we'll fix it. Well, it doesn't always work. It doesn't always work that way. So we're trying to help people understand how the sausage is made and how everything goes along with this. Mayor John Hamilton is our guest every Tuesday just after 4:05, and you've got a busy night tonight. The City Parks and Recs Board came out late last week and said, hey, Lower Cascades Park, we took the survey. We didn't want any traffic through there. We were going to close that off. Well, the survey you heard from your constituents said, no, we don't want it to be that way. So what did we learn, and what's going to go into effect tonight?
Right. So tonight there's a Parks Board meeting and a Public Works meeting, and those will be the venues, if you will, where the decision recommendation will be made. As you said, back in last year, right when the pandemic kind of started to hit us, we did a pilot project of closing about 2/3 of a mile in Lower Cascades to create a pedestrian-only, bike-only path through that beautiful park. That was very popular during the pandemic. A lot of people used it, but we also got some feedback from people who didn't like the lack of access to vehicles. The Parks Department has spent a lot of time on this, a lot of hours, and tried to think about it. So what we're going into is kind of another phase of trying this road with cars only, no trucks, and with a speed-controlled environment that will keep cars to a very low speed physically, and see how that works kind of in the next term, if you will, to see how that feels. I have to tell you, this is still, I think, kind of a work in progress to see how we balance all the interests. It would cost a lot of money to build a new trail in there. So we're trying to balance that with the other options for that. And I should note this flood, which ran down through that valley as well, tore out some of the roadway. So it's not going to be opened immediately because it's got some road repairs that will need to happen for anybody to be there safely. So tonight, the Parks Board and the Public Works Board will respond to that recommendation. And I expect we'll move to a phase 2.0 of Lower Cascades, and we'll see how that feels for the next month or year or whatever. And then I expect we'll be coming back to say, well, is this what we want permanently, or do we want to rethink it? So we're just kind of staying flexible and trying different things out.
Oh, and I think that's in obviously listening to the constituency. You're doing a survey for a reason, so people can tell you what they feel and how that works, and government is listening. So that is a good point. What do you have, $1.8 million down there to help put that all together? Did I read that somewhere? Does that number sound right?
Well, so that money is actually basically building trails on the west side of the creek to expand and enhance those, and a wonderful new connection up to the waterfall. If you haven't walked up to that waterfall, a quarter mile or so west of the creek, it's beautiful, but it's kind of hard to access. And we're going to put in a fully accessible trail with a viewing station there. So most of that $1.8 million was really programmed in the parks budget to do the west side enhancement. And then what we're talking about is the road and potential trails on the east side, too, to get people up and down through the whole park.
Excellent. Mayor John Hamilton is our guest checking in today. All right, we got a parade. It's going to be a parade unlike any other, and it's coming up on Saturday, July 3rd. It's called a reverse parade, and it's going to take place in partnership with our friends at Indiana University.
Yeah, you know, we had to plan this July 4th. Of course, we canceled last year's parade altogether, and then a couple months ago we had to decide what we're going to do for this July 4th, and it was a little dicey. We didn't know where everything was going to be. So our Parks Department, in collaboration with IU, said, let's do something different. We'll do a reverse parade, which, if you can't figure that out, it means the floats don't move, but the patrons move. The floats are going to be positioned in the IU athletic area parking lot. And parade attendees drive or walk or bike, roll past the parade float. So it's a reverse parade. So it's kind of interesting. Everybody else can be in the parade, and the floats will stay still.
I like it. I like it. It's something. It's not perfect. Next year we'll do perfect. But in light of what's going on and organizing all this in such a short time, well, we learned Indiana University. We heard earlier, what was that, last Friday, maybe Saturday, that, hey, we're open for business for all sporting events and major events and everything else. I would assume the city's following suit there, or how does that work?
Well, city, typically, we will continue to follow the health department guidance and rules on all events like that, which we have been doing and will continue to do. We're going to be in a better shape because IU and because IU Health and other partners are requiring vaccinations. That's going to help keep everybody safe. And I know IU's plans are all contingent on continuing to make the progress that we hope to see. I talk about this every Friday, as we do. We're Indiana's in the bottom quarter of states in terms of how many people have been vaccinated by percentage. So we're not leading the charge. That means we're at relatively more risk to the new variants like the Delta or the others that may come. But I think IU feels comfortable, and they certainly dig into the data pretty intensively, that on their campus and their events, they feel comfortable moving that way. And that'll be exciting and good. We just got to keep doing our job to get vaccinated, wear your masks if you're not vaccinated, and protect yourself if you're not vaccinated. I don't want to be a beat the same old drum, but I'll just remind people that there are many hundreds of people still in the hospital today for COVID, and 99%+ of them are unvaccinated. The vaccinated people are not in the hospital. It's unvaccinated folks. And so please get vaccinated, and we'll continue to hope we see the good direction on all these indicators.
Well, and that's the point. The vaccine keeps the nasty stuff away from you. You can still get a little part of it, but it's not going to put you in the hospital. And I saw this email today. The Indiana Department of Health has set up a vaccination clinic at the Harrodsburg Community Center. No appointment is necessary. Walk in when it's convenient for you. That's 1102 West Popcorn Road down in Harrodsburg. No cost, no appointment, no nothing. And individuals ages 12 of 17, they're going to have Pfizer there as well. They will have the single dose Johnson & Johnson or Pfizer for those of you who can handle that. So, again, another place here in Monroe County that maybe is a little more convenient, Mayor Hamilton, than coming all the way downtown and into the athletics complex at Assembly Hall. So we're seeing this move along, and we just hope everybody can take advantage of it. They're going to call this part of the program Yappy Hour if we continue down this path, but you've got
nice.
Yeah, we'll leave that one to the dogs, right?
Oh, boy, you got it, laying in. Down at Twitch Yard on the Friday afternoon, Food Truck Fridays, it's a great place to go. And I've not been to this yet, but I understand there's a thing they call Yappy Hour instead of Happy Hour for your 4-footed friend can go and enjoy Friday afternoon. So check it out. And I know Switch Yard's a blast to go on Friday afternoon. So enjoy that each week if you care to.
Now, they weren't affected by that was Friday night. Correct? They didn't have any problems with Food Truck Friday down there last week?
No, they didn't. Fact, then the Juneteenth went on the next day, too, though, you know, that Clear Creek was overflowing on the east side of the park. But the park itself is doing fine, and I welcome people to go down there again and check it out.
Excellent. Food Truck Friday this Friday. My man Jordan Davis from Chocolate Moose is under the weather this week. We hope he feels better, so we'll get the update for next week. But they're always adding new vendors, and maybe we'll have some music out there going on as well. So you can just check the Food Truck Friday Bloomington page on Facebook. That'll give you your updates. I thank you so much for your time. It's great to hear your voice again. We'll get caught up next Tuesday. We'll get ready for that reverse parade. I'm going to ask you next Tuesday about reverse fireworks, if we can do that.
We'll have to think about that.
Well,
that would be interesting.
I'm not sure how that would work. I don't know if we want everybody driving around lighting fireworks off, but we'll have a laugh. And we'll
glad to have you back.
Hey, thanks for joining us, Mayor Hamilton. We appreciate it. We'll talk next Tuesday.
Take care. Have a good week.